talking unlearning.
You can't unring a bell.
You can't unscramble an egg.
But you can untie a shoelace.
Or unzip a jacket.
Sounds like somebody's been getting a toddler ready in the morning.
All this and a good deal more after the break.
Welcome back, all you beautiful people. Today we're talking unlearning. As always, I'm Nick. That's Eric. We're the Get Good Guys.
And this is the Get Good Guide. That's called a laugh-in. You begin laughing before you hit record, and that way it sounds like you were having a fun, humorous conversation. Gives it kind of a fireside chat feel.
A little jaunty
tune here in April. I believe April 17th is the published date for this episode. Talking a little bit about unlearning. Now that's an interesting twist.
Indeed. We often talk about learning. Yeah. Weird. Strange. We talk a lot about being intentional, mm-hmm. right, on the podcast, mm-hmm. In the guide, and that's partially because our bodies and brains are very good at learning stuff.
Yeah.
And once that stuff is learned, especially as we start combining those things and tasks, it can be tricky to unlearn that or change your thinking about how something works, and we're going to delve into that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, habit forming, as they mm-hmm. say, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take nearly as long, and that's kind of been a thesis of the Get Good Guide, is that it doesn't take nearly as much effort as you think it does. But there's an other edge to that particular mm-hmm. sword. Mm-hmm. And we started, when we were doing the prep work for this episode, we started talking about the phrase, good is the enemy of great.
Sure.
Right? Kind of a common conventional wisdom there, but not necessarily entirely true. And you've heard us talk about why it's not entirely true. But there are aspects of it that do makes sense to think about, right? One of the reasons that one might consider good the enemy of great is because at times we can form habits or we can combine tasks in a way that works fine, but there are also times when we need to unlearn those things. Mm-hmm. And so how do we kind of go about doing that?
Yeah, especially if we want to start pushing past the area of good.
Sure.
Or the upper echelons of that good realm. Or maybe you're already there, right? Maybe you're mm-hmm. already in that good realm and mm-hmm. you have some things that you'd like to change or adjust or build upon, but you're kind of struggling to move past what already exists.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too. There are times when, even if you're not looking to push past into the valley of despair, you're looking to just stay good, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but the thing you're good at evolves or changes.
Sure, sure.
I'm thinking of like code writers, people who code or programmers, you know, now with generative AI and even before that with things like GitHub, they had to evolve in the way that they approach things.
Sure.
You see it with athletics all the time where the game evolves, someone yeah. develops a capacity, or like in NFL football right now, there's no such thing as an immobile quarterback. They've gone the way of the dodo.
There can't be.
Yeah. People are just too fast and too strong mm-hmm. and too savvy. Even like games that we've played where if you're a video game person, yeah. you know, you get a patch and the meta changes, the way the game is played mm-hmm. can change. And this is true of a lot of things, right? Yeah. There's a lot of different skills. Maybe a new tool gets introduced and you gotta unlearn some habits.
Well, has never happened quicker than it happens now, right? With all the age of information, as it were, that's kind of new ideas are popping up very often and new ways to do things. So let's dig in, shall we? Let's say we've kind of learned something in a way that we'd like to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
How about we look at some ideas of how we could adjust that, how we can fix that?
Sure.
Those learned skills.
Yeah, yeah. And this is kind of a two-stage process, right? You've got unlearning and then relearning.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously all of those are going to start in the same place, which is with intention.
Sure.
You have to identify what it is you are trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. right? Lay out what you intend to learn and then determine what's between you and that, right? Yep. What habits or what combined tasking is going to need to get unlearned.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got kind of three-ish ways to approach the unlearning component.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the kind of conscious one that we landed on briefly there in, mm-hmm. in your this autopilot idea
yeah.
that we kind of get into in our good realm is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. That's what we want to be doing very often. However, this can make it really, really difficult to change what you're doing.
Right.
You're kind of muscle memory is really good at doing what it's doing. Mm-hmm. So being very, very conscious about what you're doing and trying to stay mindful in the moment is really, really important. Possibly doing shorter practice sessions maybe is a good way to do this.
Yep.
So you don't start to get into that like too exhausted and not being able to be conscious about
it. Yeah, fatigue makes cowards of us all, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it especially makes intentional practice very difficult.
For sure.
You know, practicing until you're so fatigued that you can't, you know, focus, that's obviously, you're going to build up maybe some mental toughness, but you're definitely going to fall into non-intention. When we think about autopiloting, there's a couple different ways it can manifest. Right? You can have physical autopiloting, which is just muscle memory. Your nervous system is so ingrained into your muscular system that you're not getting a fully cerebral or neuronal, you know, mm-hmm. response. Mm-hmm. And so that takes essentially slowing it down.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to slow down and maybe even segment, almost create multiple tasks in sure. something that was one task, and then your brain will start to reevaluate that task.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this happens, I mean, even the term kind of lends itself to it, but it happens with driving very often for people driving long distances or whatever. Yep. Or you make it home and you're like, how did I get
Where
here?
Where am I?
Right. Yeah. And that's great for sometimes, but if we're trying to really adjust what we're doing, that's tricky. We've got to work around that a little bit.
Yeah. So another way to think about the fix, right, the unlearning fix, is to reframe. Mm. And so this is a bit of a trick. This is a bit of a neurological trick, but you can reimagine the task at hand as something wholly different from what you have done previously.
Sure.
And so your brain will discard its muscle memory. It will discard its neuronal nets and its mm-hmm. myelin sheaths, and it will say, okay, hey, I guess we're
this is a
doing
new
something
thing now.
Totally yeah. different and novel, mm-hmm. right?
I do this very often with the dance teaching that I do,
mm-hmm.
Where we have to learn things in stages because you can't absorb it all at once. Mm-hmm. And eventually we need to shed some of those like frameworks or kind of scaffoldings that we've built mm-hmm. To do something new. And often just giving it a totally different name is, if nothing else, is super helpful,
yeah.
right? Instead of, or we talked about golf, right? Instead of thinking, oh, I'm golfing now, we're going to play, a different game.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to maybe hit a different club even, mm-hmm. or I'm going to have a totally different piece of equipment. Yeah. It's amazing the little sort of tricks that you can deploy, to get your brain to think differently about something or to perceive something differently.
Yeah.
So vocabulary, renaming, reevaluating, mm-hmm. even changing the environment, right?
For sure.
I coached the guy who used to refer to the zone of learning. Mm. He was a defense coordinator. He would never let us practice with a group of players on the same place in the field.
Right.
So every day you had to be somewhere else because even just your brain's perception of its surroundings and like, the angle of the sun and where the stands are and what yard line I'm standing on, that is all happening. That's all perceiving or being perceived by your brain.
Yeah, and your brain's very, very good at this. Very good at making these kind of unconscious like landmark.
Right.
This is one of the big things that goes into like home field advantage, for mm-hmm. instance.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's other things that go into that too, but you feel very comfortable in that space and you're mm-hmm. used to that space. You don't have that same kind of like freedom in another space right. often.
And that can be used, that exact feeling mm-hmm. of foreignness or
right.
alienness can be used to your advantage mm-hmm. if you're trying to unlearn or fix.
Yeah.
And that takes us to our last kind of method.
Yeah. And we'll just brute force that bad boy.
Brute force.
Right? Just go, keep going. the downside of this mm-hmm. is that it just takes a little bit longer.
Yeah. Order of magnitude.
Yeah. 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 And this is going to have to be not brute force of unconscious work either.
Right.
So it's going to be a bit of a haul, but possibly what's going to need to happen in the long run is going to be this eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to put in the reps. And because if you take a straight up brute force, the thinking is it takes about 3 to 5 times as many reps to get back to zero. Mm.
Yeah.
So if you have a habit, however many reps it took to get there, let's say it's 100 reps, mm. And it's really pretty well grooved in and you've got to ungroove it. Well, then you need 300 to 500 reps
yeah.
the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you're going to be fighting your body and your brain for every one of those reps.
Yeah. This happens a lot with injuries
yeah.
where people start to compensate, but people's mm-hmm. bodies are awesome at compensating because before there was modern medicine, like you had to be able to live.
Right.
So we had to be able to limp on, as it were. But it's really hard to retrace that mm-hmm. that stuff and mm-hmm. kind of get back to normal movement or normal thinking because your body's so good at learning that it makes it tricky to stop doing that learning.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So when we think about those three things kind of in rank order of time and input, you probably got reframing as the lowest input, highest potential output, hyper consciousness or hyper intentionality as your second best. And then brute force is kind of a distant third in that way. But a lot of people assume that that's the only way. But it is kind of the least efficient.
Well, least efficient, and I think most demoralizing.
Right.
You know,
because it does. You can feel yourself losing progress until you get back to zero.
Yeah, which is good actually, but it doesn't feel that way.
And we have a number of examples of that for the Patreon, from our sort of professional setting and the homework fallacy and all of that stuff. So probably we will need to hold it there. Looking at the clock,
and we'll talk a little bit more of like we'll call the science behind this, how this unlearning works in the Patreon too. So
definitely
join us over there.
Appreciate you. We'll see you in the outro. Well, gee, thanks everybody. Appreciate you taking the time to talk a little bit of unlearning here on the Get Good Guide podcast. We would love it if you joined us over on the Patreon to talk a little bit more science and examples. That's patreon.com/getgoodguide. You can, of course, head over to the center of the Get Good Galaxy, getgood.guide. Join over there if you wish. Get access to all of the Patreon episodes as well as some bonus materials. And even if you don't join, you'll still be able to download a copy, either printable or fill-inable PDF of the Get Good Guide. And we are so grateful that you're taking the time. As always, I'm Eric. That's Nick. We're the Get Good Guys.
And this is the Get Good Guide.
Why do you care about snowflake?
My name is Hans Gitzvelfitz, a trainer of dolphins.
7 years I met Spiku.
Do you know him? Do you have a dorsal fin?
It is so very sweet, that Get Good Gold.
Why does it taste so sweet?
We're talking a little bit unlearning here on the Patreon feed.
Yeah, we talked in the main feed a lot of examples and ideas about how to do that, right? How to fix that issue. We're going to talk a little science here.
Yeah, some science, some examples.
How it happens.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get up on my soapbox about homework.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. Careful. Don't slip off.
The crash in, the sort of intro series from the main feed, something I was looking at up at the board, because we do write that out.
And
it's very carefully scripted, as you can obviously tell. The examples of things you can't un, right? Like we went through however many examples, like things you can't un. They're all stuff that, like, it's not... It's not a skill that you can't, like, it's kind of a disingenuous set of examples if you think about it.
Oh, I fell into a bell and it was ringing. I broke an egg. What do you know?
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah, it's always a good time. It's always a good time. It is impressive how many times a three-year-old can unzip their jacket while you're trying to go from the kitchen to the car.
It's insane. Yeah. It's insane. Well, my three-year-old, or soon-to-be three-year-old, has recently, he couldn't stand jackets and gloves when it was cold.
Sure.
And now he refuses, now that it's 80 degrees, to not wear a jacket.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
risk it.
So. It's been.
I've learned my lesson.
It's been exciting.
I understand your soon-to-be three-year-old has also gotten into jazz scat.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great skill. Great skill for a three-year-old to have.
Well, he's got a lot of soul. I'll give him that. It's mainly from his large life experience.
Sure. Sure. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, next thing he's probably going to be a blues artist.
Hey, man. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I'm not a huge jazz guy, but. I'll do what I can.
I can unlearn. So when you think about learning versus unlearning, right, and this idea that one of the probably the primary objections to the thesis of the Get Good Guide is, well, if you want to be great, you got to start off with a I want to be great mindset.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, good is the enemy of great.
Right.
Right.
And we have never really directly resisted that. I think there's a tacit acknowledgement that probably the most efficient way to try to navigate the valley of despair is to go in as informed and as pessimistic as possible.
Right.
Knowing that you're going to kind of have to do everything flawlessly the whole way.
Well, and even just knowing that it's going to kind of suck.
Yeah.
Right. Is really helpful up front, because then when it sucks, you're like, oh, right.
Right.
I knew this was going to happen.
Right.
And I think part of the issue with that valley of despair is that once you're good, things start to feel nice. And it feels enjoyable and cool. And then it starts to feel real, real, real crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of like contrast is upsetting. Not really that it feels crappy, but that it felt so good before.
Right. And now I have to go back to it feeling terrible.
But if you know that in advance, ahead of time, I think it could be helpful, even just, mindset wise.
Yeah. And by and large, unlearning is pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. There's not a lot of fun to be had there.
Right.
Well, and so going back to your point about, being good is fun. Mm-hmm. It's a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Musicians talk about that all the time, right? Like you don't have to be a brilliant musician to have a great time playing music. That's why there are so many garage bands and so many people who just tinker around or have a guitar or whatever. They're not out here shredding. There's not, piano players don't have to be able to play Rush E or Rachmaninoff's Third or whatever. They can just noodle and get good enough to have a good time. Mm-hmm. Jazz musicians are notorious for that, right? They're just very welcoming crew, because if you're good enough, you can get in there, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about this is kind of a hard departure, but the science, right? When we think about learning and unlearning,
I don't know what the problem with jazz to science is. It seems fine.
That's a very common segue.
Knows that.
That is the beauty of jazz scat, is that you can just yell skeet up and skeet then up. That's a segue.
And now we're into science.
Now we're moving on to science.
Science.
Audrey, go ahead and edit that out.
Yeah, not our best work. It's jazz. You get what you get.
Yeah, you gotta listen to the things we don't say.
Yeah, it's in the pauses.
The idea of learning, right? What exactly is the biological sort of happening? Right?
Sure.
And it's not completely and fully understood, but essentially you're creating networks within your brain, which is this incredible piece of equipment that can do this in extraordinary complexity.
Yeah.
And those networks deploy electricity as their communication device, and so they have to be insulated, essentially, in order to not... So in order to have any directive capacity.
Yeah, kind of efficiency there, that kind of myofascial wrapping that takes place.
Yep. So that myelin sheath gets wrapped over the course of repetition. That's how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And some people need fewer reps, some people need more. And, the sort of median number, I think, or average number is about 13.
Yeah, which is almost none.
Very few repetitions,
right? Almost
before
none.
You start to...
And this is one of those things that really people might point to about good is the enemy of great.
Right.
Because that happens so rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of approach this autopilot much faster than you expect,
right.
I think.
Right. Yeah, we were talking about youth sports before we started.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major area for skill-based sports.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get a kid who started playing basketball when they were three.
Right.
Well, the basketball hoop may have been slightly shorter, but it was still probably way too tall for what they were capable of physically. And so they developed a weird shooting motion.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And now you have to unlearn that.
Yeah.
Later
yeah.
on.
I was actually just listening to this little podcast with Ray Allen mm-hmm. on it. And it was like spectacular NBA shooter, retired now. And he was talking about this exact thing about how he hates when youth sports use like real size balls right. or real size hoops
right.
For basketball because it just reinforces compensations because they can't shoot it correctly. Yeah, and then it's so hard to fix later. And you see people even in the NBA with weird.
Yeah, they'll bring
shots.
It off their hip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, what?
And you're like, what is happening?
Yeah. No, right. I even remember that. I was not a very good basketball player, but you know, in middle school and transitioning to being tall. I was like, well, you're tall. Yeah. Your shot needs to start from above your head.
For sure.
And I was like, what?
Mm. You know? Well, and yeah, it happens pretty quickly with youth sports where if you could do one of those things well, right? Like if you have a nice looking, decent shot, it's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, this is spectacular because right. it's so many people have developed something weird. But anyway.
Yeah. And so when we develop these things, you know, we want to return to that intentionality. This is why with young people who are learning things, whether they're mm-hmm. in a classroom and that learning is curated or instructed by a professional teacher, or sure. you're in youth sports, or you're a younger person, your brain is more plastic,
yeah.
right? Because you have less life experiences, mm-hmm. you have probably less crap in your glymphatic system, yeah. and there's all these reasons. But so you're going to probably take fewer reps mm-hmm. to learn, right? The kids are sponges,
yep.
as we say. You also yep. have a lot fewer responsibilities, so you're not distracted and you're yep. very focused on yep. what you're doing. But, and there's the big but, right? If you're allowed to make those compensations or to rep those things without any intention, you know, or if you get, heaven forfend, you get a youth coach who just wants to win, right? Yeah. Or a teacher who's just trying to get certain numbers on a
yeah,
scoreboard.
Yeah, just a test or whatever, yeah.
And that can happen, right? That happens more often than one might think.
Let's kind of bridge to this homework idea yeah. that we were talking about before about the issue with, you know, oftentimes homework that is kind of sent home. I think we had talked about it. You see it a lot in math, but it could happen other places.
Yeah, yeah. So I wrote a master's thesis on this, but the
I like you said that very quietly.
It's no big deal.
Don't look it up.
Don't bother. The issue with homework in schools, in public schools specifically, but in schools generally, is that there is such a curricular arms race, right? Mm. There's so much information that teachers are being asked to teach and students are being asked to learn without any regard for mastery.
Sure.
That it becomes a breadth of curriculum question. And so because there's only so many minutes in the instructional day, the work gets sent home.
Yeah.
Right. And it's sort of one of two things can happen. Either the kid is compelled to become autodidactic, which most people are not, meaning
for sure.
they're compelled to try to teach themselves
mm-hmm.
or find resources to teach themselves or suss it out.
Yeah.
And we're talking about less than 1% of the population is authentically autodidactic.
Right.
Or you co-opt the parent as an instructor.
For sure.
Right. Or special friend or grandparent, aunt,
yeah,
uncle.
Yeah.
Right. This is why kids that have really close relationships with older siblings tend to do better
sure.
With things like homework. But mm-hmm. homework was designed to have one function, and that was repetition,
mm-hmm.
right? Of something that you already mastered, something
sure.
that you already understood instructionally. You were then going to take that from, I understand this completely, mm-hmm. to I understand this automatically.
Right.
Which is why homework for things like skills that require automaticity, like arithmetic,
yeah.
in or concrete mathematics is really valuable if that's what you're trying to
yeah,
achieve.
Yeah, can be very valuable.
Yeah, if you right. have instructional mastery and you're trying to go to automaticity, you're mm-hmm. trying to make it automatic, then great, right?
Yep.
Repetition is very, very, it's like I have a great shooting motion for my free throw,
mm-hmm.
go take 1,000 free throws.
Yeah.
But if I have a terrible shooting motion for my free throw or I don't have one, you don't teach a kid to shoot free throws by putting them on the free throw in the gym
right.
by themselves.
Right.
And saying,
good
here's
luck.
1,000 basketballs.
Make it in there.
You know, what will end up happening invariably is that they'll either try to find a way to do it
right.
or they'll get overwhelmed in a very negative way.
Yeah.
But then now you're stuck unteaching and unlearning, right? You're trying to get them back to zero so you can try to actually
yeah, either you're
them.
Trying to re-motivate them so they
right.
can try at least, or you're having to fix all that stuff that is now kind of crept up out of nowhere.
Right.
And
almost always what happens is people turn to brute force.
Sure.
Right. Rather than the reframing or the conscientious approach. So they just turn to brute force and say, no, I'm just going to stand here and yell at you or stand here and correct you
right.
until you have, you know, 5,000 reps the other way.
Well, it sounds exciting and enjoyable. Not going to lie to you.
Yeah, that's exactly what we want for young people. That's a good way to keep them engaged.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool and good. But yeah, this idea, like we talked about in the main feed, about there's more than one way to do it, mm-hmm. to kind of reframe or kind of relearn some of these things. I very much like any of kind of the tricks of pretending it's something new.
Yeah.
Even to where often I will try to phrase things as just new learning. Mm-hmm. Like it's just new learning. We don't have to relearn it because that feels pretty demoralizing.
Yeah.
You've sat there and shot 1,000 free throws and I'm like, okay, that was cool. But like that actually like is worse now.
Right.
You've just spent all that time and now you're deeper in a hole than where you started. Okay, well, now I have to shoot 2,000 just to be back to start? That seems too terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, my friend. Well, I think we're a little bit over time here, but we'll fix that in post, I'm sure.
Somebody will fix it. I don't know.
Andre.
Or this will just be longer. We'll figure it out. It's fine. It's fine.
We appreciate you taking the time and joining us to discuss these examples and a little bit of the brain science and some of the educational science behind learning versus unlearning and a few of the aspects of dealing with that. You're here, so you know where the Patreon is, but please do head over to the center of the Get Good Galaxy, getgood.guide. Get yourself a copy and get good going. As always, I'm Eric. That's Nick. We're the Get Good Guys.
And this is the Get Good Guide.